Hello and welcome to Around and About Chattanooga. I'm your host, Michael Edward Miller. In our first segment today, Teddy Wayne joins us. Teddy Wayne is a New York author who's coming to Chattanooga for the Meacham Writers Conference. His latest novel is called The Love Song of Johnny Valentine. It's about an 11-year-old pop star. Johnny Valentine is similar to Justin Bieber or Hannah Montana. Valentine's the kind of singer who appeals to tween girls, but this is not a novel for children. It's aimed at adults, it's a satire of the record industry, and it's a sometimes scathing look at celebrity culture. Teddy Wayne, welcome to Around and About.
Thank you for having me.
So this is not a children's book, but it is actually about an 11-year-old. I really liked what Rolling Stone said about it. They said it's a mix of pre-adolescent angst and industry cynicism, like Holden Caulfield Jr. in Access Hollywood Hell. Personally, I would describe it as High Fidelity, the Nick Hornby novel meets Hannah Montana. How would you sum it up?
I'll go for a mashup of the two of you, Rolling Stone meets Mike Miller. I think what they're referring to probably is that Johnny's voice is itself a mashup or hybrid of two distinct speaking voices, two distinct registers. It's an 11-year-old who's a normal 11-year-old who speaks in ungrammatical, run-on sentences, combined with a kid who's been a star in the record industry for 2 years who speaks in industry jargon half the time. So any given page will have phrases that Johnny, as a marketing expert in his own world, will unspool, mixed in with what I hope is an authentic-sounding 11-year-old.
Here's Teddy Wayne reading an excerpt of The Love Song of Johnny Valentine. This reading is from a broadcast on NPR's All Things Considered. In this scene, Johnny's mother tells him to go to bed. Johnny and his mom are on the phone together. He's in a hotel room. She's called him and ordered him to go to sleep. He hangs up, but he's too wired to sleep. He wants sleeping pills. Even though he's only 11, he's already kind of addicted to pills.
I put down the phone and stared at it. It was easy for her to say I should try to fall asleep when she wasn't the one who just performed for 2 hours in front of a capacity crowd of 17,157 fans and had to take a meeting with a label tomorrow back in L.A., who was probably going to voice their concerns that the new album hadn't meaningfully charted yet, which meant it never would, since sales momentum rarely reverses at this stage in the game unless there's a major publicity coup. And now that I'd convinced myself Zolpidem was the only way, I didn't have a chance without it. And
it's one. Johnny Valentine is the kind of star that little girls love, adults often hate. He's the kind of star that critics really love to bash, totally manufactured. There are Johnny Valentine dolls, T-shirts. I can see how he's the kind of star that the serious literary crowd might not want to read about. Did you get any flack from like publishers or readers saying, why would you write a novel about this guy?
It's probably a tough sell in certain respects that an adult hearing about it superficially, you might think, why would I want to read about exactly an 11-year-old pop star? I hope from the start, if you start actually reading it, that you'd see it's not a book that celebrates or is just purely in thrall of fandom to the idea of being a young celebrity. It's a critical look at it, while also being a distinct coming-of-age novel that Johnny is a character people seem to really respond to, and he goes through pre-adolescence, verging on adolescence in a way anyone might, but augmented and warped by his fame.
It's written in first person, and you really do write convincingly as an 11-year-old boy. How did you develop that voice?
I'm emotionally at the age of 11. I'd say probably his marketing voice was inspired a little bit by a freelance job I had writing a weekly business column for the New York Times, in which I'd interview people in media and marketing each week who spoke very much in this, again, this heavy lingo of marketing and advertising. The kid part of him was maybe, you know, partially invented. I tutored kids for a number of years, so I was around, you know, 7 to 11-year-olds quite a bit. That might have had something to do with it. But I'd say what I was trying to do was create, I think close to what Rolling Stone may have said, a version of a younger Holden Caulfield who speaks in an adult vernacular.
The novel gives a really great insider look at the music industry, or at least I'm assuming it is. It's fiction. You could just be making it all up. But it seems very convincing. How much of it is based on actual research about the music industry?
a fair amount is based on research, things like what his tour bus looks like or, you know, what kind of apparatus he has to travel around with him. But a lot of it is more about media more generally, which as a writer, both fiction writer, but I do a good amount of freelance journalism still, that I'm exposed to details or facts or ideas about how the general commerce of art works. So if it's not necessarily about music, it still is about, say, publishing or film or something else with artistic production that inevitably gets filtered through the heavy commerce of America.
I think one of the things, and it's generally a funny novel, but one of the really sad aspects is that Johnny has no illusions about that. He knows that he's basically part of a huge marketing machine. He's kind of replaceable. It's all about selling dolls, T-shirts, things like that. And he really gets the idea that people's jobs depend on him. There are dozens of people in his entourage and his staff, and if he makes even one wrong move, they could all lose their jobs. What were you trying to say with that? Are you trying to maybe comment on the increasing responsibilities of children these days, having tutored children yourself?
Not the increasing responsibilities, but the way that we're maybe getting them, adultifying them at an early age, that by, at least in New York City where I live, but I'm sure elsewhere too, by age, you know, 4, some certain parents of a certain stratum of society are already angling to get them into the preschool that will get them into the other school, that gets them to Harvard and so on. So there's that idea, but it's also a relatable anxiety for adults. We don't necessarily have, as Johnny does, 136 people traveling with us for our jobs, but most adults have to provide for themselves and others, especially if they have kids. And most adults are worried, as Johnny is, about what will my job look like in 2 years? What will my industry look like in 5 years? Am I doing well enough to get a promotion, or am I doing poorly enough to get fired? All things that he's thinking about as an 11-year-old, which I certainly relate to as a now 34-year-old writer.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Teddy Wayne. He's a New York author coming to Chattanooga for the Meacham Writers Conference. We're talking about his novel, The Love Song of Johnny Valentine. I think in some ways, The Love Song of Johnny Valentine is an anti-hipster novel. Would you agree with that characterization of it?
Well, how do you mean by that exactly?
There's this whole idea in, I guess, hipsterdom, in the Nick Hornby high fidelity kind of hipster, of music snobbery. Like people,
right.
It's not enough to like what I like. I have to have an active disdain for things that I dislike.
Yeah, so that is a good point. I love high fidelity. There's other various novels about music, popular music, that I like a lot. But as you probably have seen yourself, invariably when a literary novelist writes about music or pop music, it's almost always rock. And
yeah,
Almost always good rock, music that they would want to write about, that they themselves like, because most writers write about the things they want to write, they like. So understandably, from Great Jones Street by Don DeLillo up through High Fidelity by Nick Hornby, they're writing about genres and musicians that they have an affinity for. And invariably, that's what we maybe call high quality or serious music. But I want to write about the kind of music that, even if I'm not a fan myself of top 40 mainstream pop, it's probably more representative of America in all its glory and lack of glory than niche-specific indie rock singer-songwriter music is, which speaks to a very small percentage of the population. This is what most people are listening to.
Yes.
And as a metaphor, a functioning metaphor, this is how America works and operates. We have these big industries in which are mass produced and packaged, and heavy division of labor. You know, you have one person writing the lyrics, one person writing the melody, one person writing the chorus. It's a machine, and Johnny's part of that machine, as opposed to Bob Dylan holing up in the Chelsea Hotel to write a song.
Yeah.
That's not really how America functions.
You graduated from Harvard. You got an MFA from Washington University. What are some of the most important lessons you think you've learned about writing fiction in general?
There are a lot. I think the real key is to be disciplined, that talent doesn't do it on its own. This is something Johnny learns as well.
Yes.
It's about sacrificing, and not that writing fiction is the hardest job in the world. It's certainly not. But, it's an isolating, at times lonely profession without much feedback or gratification frequently. And the hardest part about any kind of job, but especially writing, where no one is forcing you to do it, is forcing yourself to do it and to sit down and work even when you don't feel like it. It's one thing to wait for inspiration to strike. It doesn't happen. It happens all too seldom. So you have to create your own inspiration and really not rely on it, but in fact, grind through all the bad work to get to the good stuff.
You regularly write columns for McSweeney's. You recently wrote one, and in it you wrote that you indulge in book sniffing, a new recreational drug activity yet to be outlawed by the government. What did you mean by that?
Well, it's a satire, satirical piece. I myself do not own an e-reader. I buy paper copies of books.
You don't have a Kindle or a Nook?
No, I don't. Almost more out of laziness than, I mean, I think it's unfortunately helping lead to the dissolution of the publishing industry. So I'd just be cutting off my nose to spite my face if I bought one. But that is a satire of what bookish people often say, that they love the smell of a book. I don't know about you, I don't really care about how books smell. So I was mocking the idea that books smell so good that this character not only sniffs them, but grinds them up and creates some sort of weird drug out of them for other purposes that I won't go into on the air. But yes, the smell of a book, you could find yourself in McSweeney's.
You also write, and we can't read a lot of these on the air either, for McSweeney's unpopular proverbs. And I really like this one. On the subject of publicity, any publicity is good publicity. Also, I have chronic syphilis and often send drunken hate mail to orphanages. What were you thinking with that?
Well, I don't really do that. Let's make it clear to people who are listening and tuning in right now that I don't have neither of those or do neither of those. Those unpopular proverbs are all subversive takes on regular proverbs or sayings. So any publicity is good publicity is something we often hear, but if you announce those two things, it wouldn't really be good publicity after all.
In the love song of Johnny Valentine, Johnny himself gets online occasionally and will run into these horrible things people have written about him on the internet. I noticed that on Amazon.com in the reviews for your first novel, Capitoil, someone gave you a 1-star review, but the person wasn't actually giving the book 1 star. They were like giving you personally 1 star because they were angry about something you'd said in a column somewhere. Mm-hmm. Do you spend a lot of time reading reviews, dealing with reviews, things like that?
I try not to seek that out. Occasionally, someone might actually email you directly something aggressive or hostile. I don't think I've gotten one of those in a while, but I've encountered it. So therefore, it was, I'd say, not that it was intentional research, but it informed my understanding of how Johnny might react when he sees this on about himself. You feel a little bit violated when someone emails you directly, but even when they're writing about you somewhere else for the public, in ways it's much worse because then anyone can see it. And it's something that, an 11-year-old hugely famous pop star would deal with on a constant basis. As a writer, you don't deal with it too much. But if you're of Johnny's level of fame and have that many kind of people with schadenfreude hoping you'll take a fall, you would see it. So he's prevented from going on the internet himself, but he once in a while sneaks on and does see these things and hurts the way anyone who's sensitive at all might hurt.
In your first novel, Capitoil, it's about an immigrant who comes over from the Middle East to program computers. And I think it's really interesting because the stuff you write is really funny in the love song of Johnny Valentine, the columns you write for McSweeney's. But this novel, Capitoil, it's in very many ways a book about a guy who doesn't have much of a sense of humor. Mm-hmm. What was that like, writing about somebody who's so analytical, so almost like a Vulcan from Star Trek, that humor seems alien to them?
Well, the hope with that book was that he himself is humorless, as he often says. But in fact, much of it, what he says, has humor.
Yeah.
Not in the sense of making fun of him, but his reaction to the world around him, his understanding of it, his overly analytical comprehension of things that don't require that much analysis. So it took some restraint, I guess, writing from a character's perspective who was so without this kind of the emotional affect most of us have, but then to find a way to still give both humor and provoke emotions in the reader who's observing him do so.
You'll be here for the Meacham Writers Conference Is there anything in particular you're planning on talking about or doing while you're here?
I'm giving a reading, I believe, that Thursday night. I think it's just a reading. There might be Q&A or something afterward, I would imagine.
Your first two books have been very much about outsiders. The protagonist of Capitoil, he's literally from a foreign country. Johnny Valentine, he's 11. He's still naive in a lot of ways. Is this a theme that you think you're going to keep doing in fiction, writing from an outsider's perspective?
Outsiders appeal to me, maybe not someone as outsiderish as Johnny and Cream are, where they're so clearly marked as outsiders, one a Qatari immigrant in New York, one a child pop star in the world of adult celebrity. But I'm always attracted to those who feel a little bit out of place and are trying to figure out the world that they're in.
How can the listeners find you online?
TeddyWayne.com is my website and has a Facebook and Twitter link, so that's probably the best way to do it. Or they could just come to my apartment and knock my door.
Do fans do that?
No one's ever done that. Not even non-fans have done that.
Teddy Wayne, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.